Welcome to Mindful Social, the show that intersects mindfulness and emotional intelligence with the hectic online world we live in today. If you've considered bringing conscious business practices to your workplace or that of others, you've probably heard of my guest, Scott Shute. He's got plenty of history in leadership, entrepreneurship, operations, and is the co-founder of a new community called Changing Work that brings solopreneurs and organizations together to create heart-centered and conscious businesses. And that, friends, is better for all stakeholders. Have a listen. Welcome, Scott.
Well, yay. Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
I'm glad you're here too. Talk to me about what conscious business looks like from your perspective.
Yes, let's do it.
Dig in.
Okay. Well, I like to keep things simple when I can. So my easiest definition of conscious business is a business that benefits everyone, benefits all of the stakeholders. So simply put, usually we think of three things. We think of its customers, providing real value for customers, or you could think of whoever you serve. Two is employees, on purpose, creating a great environment for employees to do their best work and to treat them fairly. And three is, yes, shareholders, you know, to provide a good business model so that the people who invested their money in you or their resources in you can share in that. And then the last one more broadly is the broader environment that we live in. It could be a local business and the community, or a big global business and the overall, you know, we. So it's essentially moving from just thinking about me or the financial part of it to the overall we, and is this thing good for everyone?
Yeah. And, you know, business-wise, whether we're a tiny little business and a storefront somewhere, or we're a huge business, we forget that we affect the community and that we survive by the community.
That's right. We often are very selfish, right? So if you think about a business, and you know, I run a small business too now. I'm an entrepreneur, and there are certainly days when I'm thinking about, oh my gosh, I need to make this much money to pay bills and, you know, X. And we get really focused on the financial piece of it, really focused on the financial piece, and we lose track of the other things. But we have to have that balance. It's kind of like in our relationships. So if you think about your primary relationships, a spouse, a mother, a child, whatever, and if you think, okay, well, my goal in this relationship is to be as happy as possible, right? This is my goal, and I want to be happy. So I should get my way 100% of the time. Like, this is how I'm going to be happy, right?
In a vacuum.
Yeah, exactly. So, of course, everybody's laughing because they know that this is not how it works. If you start acting like you have to get your way 100% of the time, you're not going to be in that relationship, and therefore, that's actually not the path to happiness. Exactly the same thing works in business. If you're only thinking about finances, eventually you're going to go out of business because you're not thinking about, we are not thinking about, how do we provide value for customers? How do we provide value for the people who are working with us? And how do we provide value for the community too?
Right, right. Yeah, and I love that you said on purpose, yeah, as far as how we're creating these things, because, you know, yeah, everybody's happy because we have a ping pong table, but that's not really going to make us all happy.
Yes. There was a time in my life, so I worked at LinkedIn for almost a decade, and there was a time when I was getting called for every customer service job that came open, right? And it was very exciting, right? So you'd get the, as an example, Uber called. And there was a time, I'm not saying Uber right now, but Uber, let's call it 8 years ago, was a very different place. And what it was known for was, you are going to work like a dog, and we're not sure about this environment. It's definitely a tech bro environment, and it's a little questionable, the environment, but we are going to make you a lot of money. That was the value proposition for employees. And, you know, eventually that wears off, right? Because eventually there's only so much money you can make before the environment is not worth whatever next paycheck is going to be. Or if the company's not as successful as it started, or the people you hire later on, at some point it breaks, right? So they were providing for some people, a great environment, because some people just want a big paycheck. They want to come in, do their work, get a big paycheck. But over the long term, that's tough. It's hard to make that last. It's not very sustainable over the long term.
Yeah, and when you think about those, let's say they're high-level executives and they were making tons of money hand over fist, are they really happy?
Exactly.
Are they happy at home? Is their family happy?
Right. And there's lots of research now on happiness. And from what I read, it looks like there's this curve that says, yeah, you are more happy the more money you make up until a certain point. And that certain point in the US is it's not that much. It's like 70 or $100,000. It's like once you can pay your mortgage and once you're safe and once you can pay for your kids' college and have a base level things, basically after that, money does not buy you more happiness. And in fact, well, one of my friends is a psychologist to literally billionaires and millionaires. And what they talk about is those people have way more problems than the average person. Or it's at least the same problems. Like getting all that money, it just made it, either worse or it made it more complicated. So happiness is not about the money. Happiness goes back to what are we all doing this for? There's this base level happiness, base level. But then what I'm interested in, one of these concepts, you're probably aware of this, is called the ikigai, and some of your listeners are probably aware. Ikigai is a concept. It's a loosely translated from Japan, that means purpose of life or purpose of living. And it's an intersection of four circles. And this is really mostly related to career, but the four circles are what I'm good at, what I love to do, what the world needs, and what I can get paid for or what I can make a living at. And some of these are subjective. What the world needs is totally subjective on how, if I think it's important, if my values line up for it. What I can get paid for is totally subjective because there could be times in my life where I actually don't need to get paid for it, or times when getting paid for it's by far the most important one of those four circles. So I find this, along with our values, to be a more accurate kind of map towards our internal happiness than just, how we normally think of it in terms of, dollars or paycheck or titles.
Yeah, so that's Ikigai is really fascinating when you start drawing your own circles and start kind of mind mapping that out to figure out what that is. And so I'm really curious how that applies in a business setting. How do we pull that together and have it not be like so woo that there's so much woo that no one can deal with it? Like that one CEO that, you imagine him sitting
Yeah,
in a lotus position on his
sure.
desk all the time and
Well,
completely out of touch.
at the individual level, I think this is very acceptable, right? To think about those four things.
Right.
I think where it gets a little more challenging, but still doable, is how do you think about it in the boardroom? So you're talking with a bunch of, C levels and trying to talk about conscious business. So what I go to is storytelling and also data. So I really like the work that Raj Sisodia and the team at Conscious Capitalism have done. First, the book Firms of Endearment and Conscious Capitalism, and a few more spinning off of there.
Fred
But
Kaufman too.
the research is pretty clear that companies who do what I said, who create a balance between their stakeholders, are actually more profitable than the ones who don't. So 14 times more profitable than the S&P average. So that's 1400% more profitable. So I go back to telling that story about your spouse. Just focus on, well, no, you focus on balance. And so then, well, how do we do that? Well, it's always thinking about balance. Instead of only thinking about the quarterly results and Wall Street and what you're going to tell them this quarter, it's thinking about long-term balance. Yes, how do we provide long-term value to our customers and long-term value to our employees? Because both of those things will lead to long-term value for shareholders. But when we make these knee-jerk quarterly decisions and, then we start to lose track. And then we start to lose track financially too.
Yeah, and we lose the sustainability.
Yeah, that's right. And so there's this part which is factual, or the research shows, but then it's a storytelling about, okay, you as a person. If you get them in a room one on one or one on eight, ask what type of legacy do you as a person want to leave? Do you want on your tombstone that you had 324%, blah, blah, blah gains over the 6 years that you were there? Or do you want the tombstone to read, he left the whole world a better place? He was a model. She was a model for, the rest of us. Did you leave a company that you would be proud to have your grandchildren work at someday?
When they leave, the
What's
company still wants them back.
exactly?
You know, that kind of coaching, that kind of executive coaching that helps people understand, because it goes back to compassion. You know, that when we have compassion, when we offer compassion, then that changes the entire environment around us and the
That's
way
right.
that we work and the way that people expect us to work. And
That's
then
right.
we get more done and we have less attrition. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think so. When we operate in a world that works for everybody, or as much a balance, right? It doesn't always work for everybody. But if we balance the needs of all of our stakeholders, then we create a world where employees want to stay, you have less attrition. They feel a sense of safety, so they're more creative. Your customers want to stay because you're providing them more value. Your customers have more trust, so they're willing to tell you things that they wouldn't if you were just at a transactional level. So everything deepens. You're able to provide deeper and better solutions to your customers. You're able to provide a deeper and more safe environment for your employees, and all of that leads to better return on investment over time.
Stability.
Stability, just like in a relationship,
Yeah.
right? If there's a deep level of trust, you have a depth that will weather storms a lot better. But in a relationship, if you're simply transactional and one person lets go and makes a mistake or just does something poorly, then if a transactional relationship falls apart very quickly.
So that brings me to that question about, okay, how do we deal with a management team? Let's say the CEO and the C-suite, the whole C-suite's behind this and they're thinking, wow, this is going to be really good. Our people are going to be happy. Life is going to be good. Our numbers are going to be great. It's going to be awesome. And then they get to the middle manager, who is a totally transactional manager. What do we do with him? Her. Let's say
Oh,
her.
well,
It's now it's
all of
her.
these changes take time, right? It's definitely easier when the leadership agrees, when the leadership is bought in. And they can't just stand on stage at the company meeting once and say it. It has to be a constant drip. And it's not just what I say, it's what I do also. So that means that if you have this, pick a leader, an operations leader, a marketing, engineering leader who's amazing at results, but they're a total, insert your word for
You
them.
can say it. We
Whatever,
say that all the time here.
they're a total jackass, or pick something worse. You have to let them go. You have to. Because if you keep them around, everybody knows it. They're like, you don't really care. You don't really care about these things because you're willing to keep this person here. When they are a train wreck from a human resources perspective, when they are a train wreck from a cultural perspective, you have to either manage them to not be a train wreck or you have to let them go. And so this, or the policies that you put in place, right? If you say one thing, but you're, as an example, let's take a simple one, simple but complicated, bereavement policy. We say, we really care about our people. Oh, but if your mother dies, we need you back in seat 24 hours later. It's like, really?
I've encountered that.
Yes. I mean, look, there are policies and there's enforcement of the policies. And the best are when it's, yeah, you need a policy there for legal reasons, but what I've seen really work on that specific policy is a manager tells the employee, hey, look, I'm really sorry. You take the time you need. The work will be here when you get back. Let us know how we can help, in the meantime. And when that happens, there's so much more trust that's built, right? Versus if you say, I need you in seat 48 hours later, right? Then you are not going to get trust from that person. You've
Right.
just created an enemy for the rest of life.
What's interesting with that is that even if you go to that employee and there's someone who's really loyal and dedicated to the company, and they too are mindful in how they work, they're going to go, okay, wow, that's really great. And they're going to come back sooner because
Yeah,
they'll
that's right.
feel connected
That's right.
and dedicated at the
That's
same
right.
time.
It's the level of trust, and the trust is everything from what I say to what I do to the policies put in place. It's every action, how we build products, how we sell products, how we market, how we do finances, the policies that we treat each other. Those all need to line up to this ethos that you're saying during the company meeting, or else we're all going to wonder, like, okay, it's nice for you to say, but this policy is terrible. It's terrible for our customer, or it's terrible for me, the employee. It all has to line up. Or if it doesn't line up, then you create an environment where it's okay for people to talk about it,
Yes.
right? Where it's
Yes.
expected. It's like, hey, as a leader, you can say, here's what I expect. Here's the type of company or type of business or organization we're trying to run. And if you see things that don't line up to this, I want you to tell us
Right.
because
Open
it's
door
impossible.
policy.
Yeah. As a leader, it's impossible to know all the stuff that's happening. So, of course, there are dumb policies and dumb, things that we do. But if you create an environment where it's good, people are rewarded for bringing those up and challenging them, then again, you're strengthening that culture all the way. So then back to that middle manager, pretty soon that middle manager is going to self-select. They're either going to say, oh, this is how we do things. And if I want to be successful, I will do things that way. Or they're going to say, this is dumb. I don't want to be part of this. And they'll choose
We're
to go somewhere
crazy.
else. And you'll hire the person you really want.
Great. Okay. So let's talk just a little bit about how we move those C-level executives into this to be able to bring trickle it down. Because I'll tell you, when I coach in a corporate environment, it's always some mid-level, usually person or maybe C-level, who brings me in, and then you get to talk to the board.
Sure.
But how do you get to the board? And I'm not giving away trade secrets here. I just think it's about data, right? I mean, you have to
It's
start.
about data, and I think it's data and storytelling. Right, you appeal to their why. On the data side, you're appealing to the analytical part of them. They've been hired to do a job, right? So if the board and they are aligned that part of that job is long-term, stability of the company, then it's providing, the data that shows all the things we've been talking about, And then the storytelling, you appeal to the human part of them. What type of mother or father or aunt or uncle or grandmother or grandfather do they want to be? What type of legacy do they want to leave? And you tell the stories of how it has worked and how you've seen it. And if you have their data, right? Because oftentimes as a consultant, we're brought in, we get to see their employee surveys or their, annual or biannual surveys. You can tell the stories of those employees who are either really loyal and here's the story that goes along with it, or they're out the door and here's the story that goes along with that. And those are hard to miss because that's reality. That's not me trying to shape anything. That's just being a mirror of what's going on.
Right. And that being a mirror is so important because they don't look in the mirror.
Yeah, the path to wisdom always starts with self-awareness, right? We have to know
Exactly.
who we are to know who or to know where to go next for where we want to be.
So this brings us to changingwork.org. What's that?
Well, I changed my tagline, so I'll back up a bit.
Okay.
In my career, I was an operations customer service VP at LinkedIn. And then I was a volunteer helping to start our mindfulness program, and I eventually turned it into my full-time gig. I was the head of
Oh, that's
mindfulness
cool.
and compassion programs at LinkedIn. And I changed my tagline at that point to changing work from the inside out. And there's a much longer story there, but it's my life's mission. And what I mean by that is that, well, I'll go back to one of my favorite quotes from Rumi. He said, "Yesterday I was clever and I tried to change the world, but today I'm wise and I'm working on changing myself." So for each one of us, if we want to change the world, whatever it is, whether it's politics or education or race reform or work, it starts with us. And it's an inside job. It starts with our own consciousness.
Right.
So anyway, after I left LinkedIn, I was doing consulting and speaking and coaching and all the things. But I still had this mission, change work. And I mean it. I mean, maybe it's my ego or whatever, but I mean it for 3.5 billion people, all of work. How do we make it better? And I quickly realized, obviously, I can't do this by myself, not going to do it by myself. So we created this organization, changingwork.org. And in this first phase, we're trying to collect or gather practitioners, the coaches and podcasters and solopreneurs of the world who are trying to do this work of conscious business. And we're gathering them together to help them be more successful. And then phase two is we're going to build stuff together as a group of coaches and solopreneurs, and then offer those things to businesses, offer them to enterprise, essentially curate the best of us and make that available so it's easy to implement. So that's what we're up to.
When did you start this?
Well, it started as an idea about a year ago, and then we used the platform Circle, and we kicked it off in Circle, I think in August. And we're up to about almost 600 members now
That's
and growing.
great. Yeah, growing fast.
Yeah, thank you.
That's good. I think it really, I took a look at it and, I a couple of things struck me. The first one is that we really need this because everyone works. We all have this, but we don't know how to move forward with having our lives be more satisfying,
That's right.
even with getting to the point where we find that self-awareness, like, oh,
That's right.
I've been sitting at my desk for 18 hours. I maybe need to change something,
That's right.
which, in tech in particular, that's common. And
That's right.
so I thought that was really cool. But I also noticed that you split up the site into solopreneurs and for teams. So let's talk a little bit about that
Sure.
and how do they
Well,
cross over?
the idea is that really eventually we think of it like three different markets that have different needs. So there's solopreneurs, and for them we're trying to help make them more successful with the idea that if each one of them is more successful, then there's more people out there doing this work. So that's great. So there's a certain set of needs, and all of this is about curation. So for them, we want to curate the best practices of running a small solopreneurship because we all have to solve the same problems. How do I brand myself? How do I market myself? How do I build a website? How do I build, blah, 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 all the things. And then a second group, if you will, is leaders of all type, but let's call them business leaders. So for them, we want to curate the best practices of conscious business and help make it really easy for them to use on themselves and also with their teams. And then the third leg of the stool is individuals, basically workers, the individual contributors. And look, that could be leaders too, as themselves. But like for me, how do I, quote, get better? How do I get happier? How do I
Right.
get more
Yep.
successful at what I'm doing in a conscious business way? And that's a totally different set of trainings or needs. And we want to curate the best practices for them as well. So over time, we're just getting started, but over time, that will be kind of how we think about our end markets and who we're serving.
Very interesting. I've been a very firm believer in the strength of community, and really bringing people together. I've been on a few different circle things from time to time, and just as we think about that as drawing things together in a circle and making space for everyone to be at the table and to have an opportunity to take what they need from that in order to grow is really what we need right now because everybody's miserable. It's
Well,
true.
I don't think that
Okay, you're
everybody is
not,
miserable,
but
but
it's,
some certainly feels like it sometimes. It
we're
certainly,
struggling.
yeah, no, for sure. For sure, there's a lot of challenges in our world. No doubt about that. We call it the changing work collective with the idea that we're all in it together. And, in it in the biggest sense, 8 billion of us on the planet or 3.5 billion in the workforce. Like, none of this is going to happen with any one of us. We can change our little corner of the world. And in fact, that's what all of us will do. And when each one of us change our little corner of the world, that's when we make massive change at a global level.
Yes.
So we feel like our role is a little bit like a lighthouse. Let's show the way a little bit. And then also a little bit like a container. We're creating this community and filling it full of love. And then a sort of magic happens. My friend Dacher Keltner, who wrote the book on awe recently, he talks about collective effervescence as one of the pathways to awe. I would say he's a scientist, so he's not sure what he believes in the divine. I believe in God. I believe in the divine. That's part of my upbringing. And so I'm going to say that the collective effervescence is a pathway to the divine. Well, so for us, here's how I think about effervescence. You put all these people together in community that have the same ethos, that are trying to do a good, right thing, and a kind of magic happens. A magic that we can't predict. And we're seeing it inside of our community with new relationships and new businesses and new lots of things being formed that we never could have predicted.
I
It's
love
good.
the idea of the effervescence because it really is when you bring people together, you get that a little happy here and a little happy there and a little compassion and a little empathy and a little bit of
That's right.
more
That's right.
that we don't get. And right now, when we are really divided in so many different ways, whether it's working remote and working in the office, those kind of things, we need something that's going
Yes.
to give us a little bit of that
That's right.
fizz.
Well, as humans, one of the downsides of our makeup is that we have a negativity bias, right? And this has served us well in staying alive, meaning that, as an animal, as a Homo sapien, if you hear a noise in the dark, you assume it's something bad, right? You assume it's something bad, and that keeps you alive. Because if you're not really worried about it, then you're not on guard, and maybe it is something bad, and then, get eaten or killed or whatever it is. So if you take it in our everyday life, you read the news, right? The news is kind of our collective amygdala. It's our collective fear center. This is not an accurate representation of what's going on in the world. It's the worst 0.0001% of what's going on. It's the stuff that could kill us.
Right.
And we're fascinated by it because as humans, we're trying to figure out what could kill us. Now, this does a great job of keeping us alive. It does a terrible job of keeping us satisfied or happy or content or peaceful. And so it's up to us to shine a light on the good things, right? And this is what we're trying to do at Changing Work. It's not to ignore the thousands of terrible things in the world. We're well aware of them. We don't need any more help reminding ourselves of them. But we do believe that people need a little more help in reminding of the good, of reminding that it doesn't have to be whatever this way. And so here's the thing. When we as individuals focus on the light, if we focus on what's good, it gives us more strength to deal with the dark.
It makes us less reactive.
That's right.
Yeah. Because, I mean, I call it the modern tiger. The whole story about the amygdala comes from there's might be a tiger in the bushes and you react. Well, here it's the sound of a plane going by. It could be almost anything that could potentially trigger that. And
Oh,
if we
it's
can
an
train
email.
ourselves to find the light in that,
That's right. It's
yeah.
an email from a customer. Oh, I have a story. I have a story.
Great.
So, one of the things I do is I cycle. I like mountain biking. I like road biking. And about a year ago, I was road biking with a friend, and we were on a highway. It was a little bit of a busy highway going around a corner. And because there were cars coming in both directions and the shoulder wasn't very wide, the cars behind us had to slow down for just a little bit, like really just a little bit. But this one guy apparently he'd had enough. Maybe there's more than one set of bikers. And as he was passing, he's like halfway out the window, just screaming at us, just all the way, like mouth frothing, swearing, calling me all kinds of names, screaming, you know, and I'm trying not to react to it, but it's also kind of hilarious. So I shouted back, I'm like, "Hey, have a great day," you know, which probably just made him more angry.
Probably.
Okay, so that was a year ago. But it left a mark, you know, like it's dangerous, you know, it's really dangerous. So this past weekend, I was biking with my son. We were in kind of stop and go stoplight traffic, and a car of, you know, older teenagers or people in their young 20s went by, full of teenagers. And this kid yells something out the window at me and then passes. And I can see them all kind of laughing. And so I immediately kind of, I didn't hear what he said, but I was getting agitated. And because he stopped at a stoplight, I'm going to get another chance to see him. And so as I'm pulling up, I'm preparing all the smart aleck things I'm going to say, you know, and all the possible responses in the world that I'm going to give. And so I decided to go with, "What'd you say?" And I tried not to say it in too much of a threatening manner. Just I was just curious, and he laughed and he said, "Oh, what's your FTP?" And I'm like, "What FTP?" And I was confused. I went and I biked up to my son, and I said, "What's an FTP?" And he goes, "Oh, functional threshold power. Like you only know it if you're a serious biker." And so he's basically like kind of this code of, you know, this inside joke with another biker, you know, "What's your number?" And he said it in, and he said it the second time. He was totally laughing and smiling and kind of joking around with me. It was not what I had expected, right? I expected that he was this other guy who was screaming something mean. In fact, this was an act of solidarity with me. And of course, you know, we're all dressed in spandex. He's probably having a little fun too. But still, it was more of a fun connection moment. But this is the thing. We assume, our first assumption is that things are bad.
Activity bias.
Yeah, negativity bias.
Yeah.
And we're all susceptible to it.
I love that story. My wife is a biker, and I've done a lot of I've been a roadie many times, and yeah, there's a lot of stories, and I'm very careful when I pass bicycles, more
Thank
so
you.
than, oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
Thank you for that.
Well, sure.
I'd love to hear more about changingwork.org and how people can find you. How can they get involved? What can they
Sure.
do?
Well, a couple ways. If you are a solopreneur, if you're a coach or a podcaster, whatever, and you are interested in making work a better place, then this is for you. You can come to us at changingwork.org. And if you sign up, we have these coupon codes. If you use the coupon code podcast24, the number 24, we have some special discounts for you. So you get a month free and then 2 more months for half off. Kind of check it out, see if you like it. If you are a business leader and you want some of this joy and goodness at your place, you know, I do workshops, I do speaking events. So if you have a sales conference or a leadership thing coming up, you know, reach out and you can find us same place, changingwork.org. Or if you want to know a little bit more about me, you can go to scottshute.com, have a little more detail on the Scott side of things. But and would love to hear from you. Feel free to just reach out. Find me on LinkedIn or any other place. I'm
Great,
around.
great. Thank you. And all those links will be in the blog post on the podcast. And you know, go check it out because you're gonna like this.
Yeah, it'll
Be
be good
interesting.
fun.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Scott. It's been a
My
pleasure.
pleasure. Thanks for having me. And thanks for everybody who's out there listening. And, you know, go out there and be a ambassador for compassion, because we need more of that.
We need a lot more of that. We need a lot more of that. Thank you. Thanks for tuning in for another episode of Mindful Social. It's been so great to see the subscriptions growing, and the feedback has really helped me make the show even better. So if you know somebody who needs to be on the show, email me at janet@janetfouts.com, and please send me feedback there too, or post a review on the podcast platform you're listening on. Oh, and do me a favor. Share this show on social media or with a friend. Thank you.